Welcome back, all you nerdy listeners, and welcome to the episode 7.21 of the Story for Nerds podcast, the show featuring a group of sci-fi and fantasy authors who not only love to discuss the latest adventures in books, TV, film, video games, anime, and all other forms of nerd entertainment, but they also read and collaborate stories as well. And I have the immense pleasure of being here with Miss Abby Goldsmith.
Hello.
Mr. Scott Parkins.
Good morning.
And Mr. Raphael M. Jordan.
Thank you for that introduction, Eric, and welcome to the episode, ladies and gentlemen. So if this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome aboard. And if you are longtime listeners, you will know that we are coming up upon our nerdy chat segment. This is where we just pretty much talk up nerd shop. But before we do that, we got a couple authors on the panel who do some writing, and so we always like to see what they've been up to on the running front of things since our last meetup. So we always start with Miss Goldsmith. What have you been up to on the running front?
I'm writing a little bit of bonus content for my Torth series in preparation for starting it on another platform.
Oh, wow.
Can you tell us what platform?
Yes, it'll be on Royal Road.
All right.
Yeah, and I'm actually not going to be starting that until December because Royal Road gets flooded in November due to a contest.
NaNoWriMo related?
It's related. I don't know why. They have the contest the same month as NaNoWriMo, but they call it the Write-A-Thon, and basically people just post as much as they can during that month.
Hmm.
Yes, so I figured I'd rather not compete with that.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, I mean, that's cool to kind of take advantage of the whole theme of the month and everything to, like, really get, like, a load of content on their platform and stuff. But, I mean, if you do have, like, an end goal to actually get noticed and kind of beat out the noise, then, yeah, I understand why you would be like, let me just kind of sit back a little bit and Wait for tempers. Well, not tempers to sell, but, you know, just for the noise to come down a little bit.
I think it's a smart tactic because, yeah, like Raph says, if you want to be heard above the noise, you can either be incredibly shrill or you can just wait for it. And right. I think that's probably a wise choice.
So after conquering, you either have to be
like obnoxiously louder than everyone else. And that's going to have to require a lot of noise, or you can just like, oh, okay, I'll just wait, no rush, I'll be here when you guys are waiting for me.
Yeah. Wish me luck, guys. I mean, don't wish me luck yet, wait until December. That's when I'm gonna be like shaking with nervousness.
So you're gonna try to come out this year still before Christmas, or are you gonna
wait
for it? Okay,
that's my plan. Hopefully I don't lose my nerve.
Right, Christmas buying season. You want
to? No, and that's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah, like December is a really good month to get some stuff on board and everything because people are in the mood for buying new stuff, and a lot of workers are at home for the holidays because they're on vacation and stuff. So yeah, good timing.
Hopefully,
you'll knock it out.
Yeah.
And how about you, Scott? What have you been up to on the writing front? Oh, you went back to helping your son with his, like, restarting his story, right?
So in one of those interesting, he's rethinking a lot of things. And unfortunately, in the meantime, he is a teaching assistant at a local university.
Oh.
And just did midterms, so that kind of derailed him a little bit. And he turned out COVID positive on Monday. So he's now, second son turned out COVID positive this afternoon. So, third son has a sore throat and congestion. We're assuming that we are now plague house. So a lot of that interactive type thing is, diminished at the moment.
No.
So...
Well, hopefully everyone...
Two and a half years later, we finally got COVID.
Well, you know what? I was just telling Eric that, hey, my boss just sent a ping in Slack. She was like, FML. I've been under the weather for the past couple of days, and every single day I've been testing, it was negative, but I just took two tests this morning and it turned out to be positive. So she had to cancel all her meetings and stuff, and then she has kids in high school, and so she had to relay the message and information to them and had to go through all this different protocol and stuff. I was like, oh, dude, that sucks. For what it's worth, it's a very minor case, and I mean, she's not an, I mean, she works remote, and so she was just canceling everything today just to get stuff up in order. But she was like, you know what, I feel fine and stuff, and we do video chat. I mean, we had a video chat with her today and stuff before she told us that, you know, she had COVID, and she wasn't coughing or anything. I noticed she looked a little paler than usual, but that was about it. But she was like, no, I mean, I'm good. And I know, Eric, when you and Sarah had COVID, I mean, y'all stayed at home and stuff, but y'all weren't so deterred that y'all were just bedridden the whole time. I mean, y'all just decided to work and stuff. So
no, we spent like one day recovering, and then like it was just exhaustion after that. It was just more just dealing with low energy.
Yeah. So hopefully it's a minor case that your son...
William has been miserable for 4 days now, with a deep, painful chest cough, and wakes up with the, you know, mountain of pain and phlegm right here. And sadly, because he's a college student and just went off of our insurance, he has no health insurance.
Oh!
So we're...
How old is he?
He's 26.
Oh, no.
He just went off it
earlier
this year. So, yeah. Yeah, all kinds of fun. But anyway, in the meantime, no, I did not get a lot of writing done. I did, however, refinish a desk, for whatever that's worth. I'm putting the final coats of polyurethane on it now, and we'll move it into COVID son's room, hopefully, on Friday.
Yeah, well. Here's to a speedy recovery for everyone in your household, for certain.
Yeah.
In my case, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't do as much writing as I wanted to. On my personal projects, I know I touched base with you and Abby a little bit about the Story by Nerds segment that we have going on. And so I was asking a couple of questions about that because I was wanting to do some research on that. And man, holy crap, Egyptian mythology is fun. it is so much fun. I mean,
it's part of why I wanted to go there, because we all know about it.
Yeah,
sort of.
That's the key word, sort of. Like, yeah, we've seen shows and a couple of movies that dabble in it and everything. But, I mean, really diving into it, though? Like, you know, how, you know, the way people dive into Greek mythology and all that stuff. I mean, you don't really hear about Egyptian mythology quite up to that, like, level itself. So, what'd you say?
I can say Egyptian gods, not unlike Greek and Roman gods. And Nordic gods, for sure, had a tendency to be inappropriate once in a while.
Speaking of the drama.
Speaking of the goddess, the goddess of the sky and the god of the earth, and the fact that they were sisters but still had five kids, or that they were brother and sister but still had five kids.
That's pretty Greek sounding to me, but.
I mean, didn't also a lot of pharaohs kind of to keep the bloodline pure?
Yeah.
Well, exactly right. And that was part of the problem, right? Is that that, and Europeans did the same thing. I mean, the royal families tended to intermarry because they believed that there was a genetic blood, you know, noble blood concept, and so they tended to keep it in the family.
Literally. old people are weird, that's what I'll say. that's where I guess my writing has been. But I am going to be off next week doing some apartment shopping. And so during those off times, I'm definitely going to be taking full advantage of like just diving into the story finally and everything. And rest assured, you'll probably get a couple more pings, like, oh, okay, how's this sound? Does this make sense and stuff? So, know, just friendly heads up.
Speaking only for myself, what's funny is that what's been inflaming my mind is since I was working with my son on his book, I've actually switched off my Dragon book novel, which I really need to rewrite and get out, onto a science fiction novel that I've been thinking about for a while. So,
nice. Flipped.
Yeah. And funny that you mentioned that, speaking of which, I saw this really interesting animated YouTube series, and it was pretty much an animated series about the Greek gods in high school, and it was just such an interesting take. I was like, oh my god, this is gonna be so ridiculous, but it was so fun and so unique and everything. It was just like it kind of offered a unique, different perspective of the Olympians, and of course, I've been working on a series based around the Olympians, so it kind of gave me that bit of an itch. I was like, man, I really want to go back to that, but I was like, no, you said that you were going to focus on this sci-fi story, so you got to stick with it. So, that kind of gives me a sense. It was like, okay, once you finish this story, then you could go back into, you could go play with that one again. Yeah, so. To have so many ideas in one head and only...
You know, I continue to be confused by young writers who say, where do you get your ideas? It's like, I open my eyes once in a while.
Yeah, I was about to say, I
read occasionally.
I live in the world.
I live, yeah.
I exist, therefore I have ideas.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand the question. Help me.
I get that from young writers sometimes, you know, and I'm always like, well... know if you really want to be a writer if you're having trouble coming up with stories.
Yeah.
Seems like a bad idea. Anyway, yeah.
Or maybe it's just a case of like maybe they haven't been around long enough to.
No, come on. I had story ideas when I was like 10.
I know, and that's why I stopped. I was like, no. Because I always tell people, I was like, okay, I've been drawing ever since I could hold a pencil. And I've been writing ever since I was able to form a complete sentence. So, and of course, I mean, at that time, I mean, a lot of it was fan fiction, but it was still writing stuff.
Well, and we've been understanding stories since we were all like 1 year old, and telling stories since we were about two.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I was like typing on my little typewriter when I was like 7. I had like a little series of books I'd pumped out because I was really into the Wizard of Oz. And it's basically like, oh, I'm going to make the Wizard of Oz except with animals instead of people.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, but like, I don't know. Like, I think it's a whatever. I mean, like there's all different kinds of writers, you know, there's like poets and prose writers and so forth. So I think it's possible to enjoy writing without enjoying story. But I think that like storytelling is its own thing.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And I mean, if you it can be taught to a degree, kind of like how drawing can be taught. But if you don't have, you have to have it though. You have to have something to start with.
You have to want to like, I mean, I went to an art school and I practiced for like years and years. I took life drawing classes every single day. You've got to have some patience for that. Like that requires like, you've got to be able to sit around and enjoy that.
Well, what's funny is a lot of people like the idea of being a writer, but don't particularly enjoy writing.
Right. And it's such a low barrier to entry compared to making video games or making films.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, all I need is a laptop.
Yep. That simple.
But or a like, paper well, and a bloody stump,
I'm so
whatever.
Busy.
You know?
I don't have enough time. It was like, if you love something enough, you'll make time for it. So,
yeah.
But I digress. How about we get into some nerdy news where we offer some sci-fi and Facebook recommendations along with updates in nerd culture. And just a heads up, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be quite the nerdy news because a lot of stuff is going on in the month of October and then some. So yeah. So we'll start with the basics. Of course, we always like to start off with some books. So the first book recommendation that we have is Book of the Night by author Holly Black. Now, Charlie Hall has never found a lock she couldn't pick. a book she couldn't steal, or a bad decision she wanted to make. She spent half her life working for Glomis, magicians who manipulate shadows to peer into locked rooms, strange people in their beds, or worse. Glomis guard their secrets greedily, creating an underground economy of grim wars. And to rob their fellow magicians, they need Charlie Hall. Now she's trying to distance herself from past mistakes, but getting out isn't easy. Bartending at a dive, she's still entirely too close to the corrupt underbelly of the Berkshires. Not to mention that her sister Posey is desperate for magic, and that Charlie's shadowless and possibly soulless boyfriend has been hiding things from her. When a terrible figure from her past returns, Charlie descends into a maelstrom of murder and lies. Determined to survive, she's up against a cast of doppelgangers, mercurial billionaires, Glomis, and the people she loves best in the world, all trying to steal a secret that will give them vast and terrible power. So once again, this is Book of the Night from author Holly Black, and this is available on Amazon and Kobo. All right, next one that we have is the Kaiju Preservation Society. This is from author John Scalzi. So when the COVID-19 sweeps through New York City, Jamie Gray is stuck as a dead-end driver for food delivery apps. That is, until Jamie makes a delivery to an old acquaintance, Tom, who works at what he calls an animal rights organization. Tom's team needs a last-minute grunt to handle things on their next field visit. Jamie, eager to do anything, immediately signs on. What Tom doesn't tell Jamie is that the animals his team cares for are not here on Earth. Not our Earth, at least. In an alternate dimension, massive dinosaur-like creatures named Kaiju roam a warm, human-free world. They're the universe's largest and most dangerous panda, and they're in trouble. It's not just the Kaiju Preservation Society who have found their way to the alternative world. Others have too, and their carelessness could cause millions back on our Earth to die. So once again, this is the Kaiju Preservation Society from author John Scalzi, and this is available exclusively on Amazon. Okay, so heads up, Abby, apologies in advance. There's a bunch of film and video game news that's going to be going on, so we're going to get through it as soon as possible, and hopefully I just don't hear myself talking. So by the time you guys get this episode, Black Adam will have premiered in theaters this Friday. So about it, from New Line Cinema, Dwayne The Rock Johnson stars in the action-adventure Black Adam. The first ever feature film to explore the story of the DC superhero comes to the big screen under the direction of the director of Jungle Cruise. I'm not trying to butcher that name. Apologies in advance. So, in ancient Kandak, Teth Adam was bestowed the almighty powers of the gods. After using these powers for vengeance, he was imprisoned, becoming Black Adam. Nearly 5,000 years have passed, and Black Adam has gone from man to myth to legend. Now released, his unique form of justice, born out of rage, is challenged by modern-day heroes who formed the Justice Society. Hawkman, Dr. Fate, Adam Smasher, and Cyclone. Johnson stars alongside a slew of other characters and actors. It's a long list. You can check it out in the show notes. Eric, I know you and me and the missus, we've already got our tickets. What about you, Scott? I saw that
I will not see it on Friday, though I would like to because I'm dirt poor and need to save my pennies, but I will see it on $5 Tuesday.
$5 Tuesday.
Guaranteed. I have been looking forward to this one for close to a year now.
Oh, really?
Yep. Since they first started teasing it, I've been just desperate for to release. I'm very happy we're finally there.
Nice. Very, very nice. I'm not the biggest Black Adam person, but it's one of those weird cases where usually the more I see, the less I want to see something. In this case, the more I've seen, the more I'm like, oh. okay, here's my money.
Really? It looks that good? I haven't really, I think I saw like one trailer.
It looks like it's going to be a fun action movie, basically.
Yeah. I'm seeing it with tempered expectations. I'm not going in there to expect anything groundbreaking, but it just looks like a really good, fun movie, and it's going to be an interesting take on the superhero genre.
Well, and within the limits of DC botching nearly everything they touch, I get the impression this one may work out. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. Like a lot of other films are those, you kind of just look at it and it just has that feel about it. And this one feels a little different for some reason. And I know The Rock is he's a big fan of the character and stuff. That speaks a lot to it as well. So I think he's really going to make sure that he does justice to the character.
If the stories are true, I mean, he went through a physical transformation in order to be the buff guy that Black Adam was. He intentionally changed himself to play the role rather than wearing a muscle suit.
Oh, yeah. No, I heard they wanted him to wear a muscle suit, and he said no.
Yeah. Which is silly. I'm like, why would you need a muscle suit? You're Dwayne Johnson.
He needed to be bulkier, I guess. But no, see, here's the impression I get is that Dwayne is an actor who can be better than he has been. And I get the impression that he's going to give it everything he has for this role.
I think so. Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the vibe I get from the pre-show.
Yeah. I can agree with that to an extent because, I mean, right now he's really an action star, but I've seen there have been roles where there is action, but there's a little more substance to it, and I think he's, like, taken on those roles just so he can, like, kind of portray more of his acting chops and stuff. And so,
I liked him in the Jumanji films. That's about it. Yeah, the Jumanji films.
Oh, yeah.
When he relaxes a little bit, he's actually a really engaging guy. And and so you kind of hope that comes through more rather than always being over the top.
Yeah.
Also, I think the roles where he's willing to make fun of himself, like, you know, in Jumanji, like, you know, the smolder, you know, he makes fun of that, you know, that look he had in wrestling and stuff like that. So I think when he does things like that, also, it helps push through, you know, he's able to just have more fun with the role.
Yeah.
Well, and the mythos on this one sounds more interesting to me as well. There's a certain timing, social component here that intrigues me individually, at least. So.
Yeah. So hopefully when we all see it come our next episode, we have some good things to say about it. Hopefully. Okay, other bit of nerdy news. Well, rejoice, all the gamers out there who have a PlayStation. Well, for what's worth, PlayStation, y'all have already had this for a good minute. But for people who have Xbox, Switch, or PC, you've probably heard about Persona 5 for quite some time since it came out initially, and what was that? Was that 2017 or something like that? The original. But then there was Persona 5 Royale, which pretty much just enhanced the story. But sadly, all this was on PlayStation, or PlayStation exclusive, until now, because Persona 5, the definitive edition of Royale, is going to be available by the time you guys get this episode on the 21st. So, yeah, if you have been waiting to get Persona 5 and haven't had access to it, now is your chance. And get it now. Get this now.
The impression I get is if you already have it, there's really nothing new here. But if you've been holding off because you want it on Switch or Xbox or PC, go for it, because this is the you know, it's all the DLC. It's the fully loaded soup to nuts version. So
I'm more excited that I can get it and have it on the Switch. So when I travel, I have it with me. So, because, you know, it's a really fun game. I remember when I was like, God, where, I think I was on, I want to say I was on the art level, artist level, you know. And I had to travel and I was like, no, I just want to know what happens next. I want to play more. So, you know, now I have the Switch. So, you know, if I get back into the groove to play Persona, I get Persona 5 again, I'm like, I can take it with me and I can play it.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And while I did play Persona 5, I never did get around to playing Royale. It just came out in one of those times where I just had such a huge catalog and I was like, okay, I'll get around to it eventually. But now it's in my face because it's on Game Pass and like, well, crap, I don't have much of an excuse now.
Well, and if you haven't played it before, this is the way to do it, right? I paid $60 each time for each version. This gets you all of it in one package. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I will say, I thought that, you know, Royal was a lot of fun. And I know it was basically the exact same game, but I really did like the changes they threw in there, that they had in there. I like the extra story they added on, you know.
The extra semester. So like,
yeah, the extra semester. So, I mean, it's in essence, Persona 5, it just has a little more added on. I know, Scott, you said you still preferred the original Persona 5. I liked Royal a little better just because I liked that add-on. I liked the changes, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
I've played both versions at least 5 times each, so
yeah.
Whatever else that is true, I liked it 5 times worth, and I'm on my another run through. So
yeah, and these are very like I think you're going to put at least, and not to deter you from this, but listeners from this, but you're going to put over 100 hours into this game. It's a very, very lengthy game. But the fact that people go back and replay it again, I mean, I played it multiple times myself. It's just such a magnificent gaming experience that just it doesn't seem to captivate such a mass of people the way it does. Like, I mean, this is the fifth Persona in the series, but I think this is the one that really kind of made its mark, like on a massive level. Because before this, it was a very niche demographic, and people were always raving about how good it was. But I think I think it was Persona 5 that really kind of hit the mat, like, you know, the mass audience, kind of like how Elden Ring hit the mass audience with Souls games and stuff. So. I can't speak enough about how much I enjoyed it. I'm definitely looking forward to diving back into Shibuya one more time for old time's sake.
Didn't it get our Game of the Year selection when it came out?
I can't imagine that it didn't get Scott's Game of the Year selection. I have to look at the headers again. I know in our group it was Game of the Year. I'm not too sure if that's what was voted on.
Was voted, okay.
But the thing is, I mean, that year that it came out, I mean, it had some steep, steep competition too.
Yeah, didn't like a God of War come out that year as well? Or
I honestly can't remember.
I remember there's a lot of.
It was a very, very good year for gaming and stuff. So it might have came out that same year. Like I said, I think the original one did come out in 2017. I do know for certain that was a year that. It was actually, oddly enough, it was actually Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, right.
Yep, yeah. That's what it was. It was
Horizon Zero Dawn. That's also Breath of the Wild came out that year as well.
It was Breath of the Wild, and then it was God of War, and that's why I was like, surprised, like when the results came in, it was actually Horizon Zero Dawn, because Horizon Zero Dawn, because of it coming out in that year, Persona 5 and Breath of the Wild, it didn't get a lot of recognition. Well, it got nominations, but it did take home like a lot of like awards, like from a lot of the game awards and stuff out there.
Well, I mean, the fact that it's still talked about, I mean, shows you it still does a really good job. I mean, so it lives up to it. And I mean, all the games in that year, you have a sequel for Horizon coming out. Yeah. You have, you know, Zelda has a sequel coming out as always, but this is actually a sequel.
God of War is gonna be coming out in a couple of weeks, actually. Yeah. So no, it was a good year to be a gamer and stuff. So yeah, again, if you guys have been waiting to get a take on Persona 5, well, here's your chance. Welcome aboard. Looking forward to everyone having a ride on that. Okay, other nerdy news that we have. between now and then, well, this is coming out same day as well, on the 21st.
I thought Persona was 27th and this one was 21st.
Well, I looked it up on the website. It said the 21st. So yeah, I was looking at the same thing. I thought that was coming out a little later. So Gotham Knights is coming out, and so I know that this kind of put Eric in an emotional pickle briefly. Sorry to scare you.
I have it listed on my Gamefly as the number one spot, so I'm hoping to get it.
Yeah, but the premise of this is, according to the PlayStation Store, because I tried to look up the story on the game site itself, and they had no content on the story, just about all the gaming features. But Batman is dead. A new expensive criminal underworld has swept the streets of Gotham City. It is now up to the Batman family, that being Batgirl, Nightwing, Red Hood, and Robin, to protect Gotham, bring hope to its citizens, discipline to its cops, and fear to its criminals. From solving mysteries that connect the darkest chapters in the city, in the city's history, to defeating the notorious villains in epic confrontation. Gotham Knights is an open-world action RPG set in the most dynamic and interactive Gotham City yet. Patrol Gotham's five distinct boroughs and solo or in co-op, and drop in on criminal activity wherever you find it. Your legacy begins now. Step into the night. So the reason why Eric was in a bit of an emotional pickle was because, well, he was thinking about getting it, and still are, but initially you were thinking about getting it for Christmas, and I said, I was like, oh, well, I'm thinking about getting it too. And you're like, no, you can't get it now. which I'm not, and I'll explain the reasoning to that when we get to our nerdy news, but just needless to say, I have more than enough content to keep me busy, so I am not about to tackle on another video game and stuff. But
my only frustration is PS5 only.
Huh?
My only it's Xbox One as well. PS5 no, it's Xbox Series X as well.
Is it?
Yeah. I was about to say, I only went to the Sony site because I couldn't find the story anywhere else but on the Sony.
It's next gen consoles only, is what it is.
I was about to say, to that end, though, it is only next gen consoles.
If the PS4 owner who's not ready to blow another $600 on a PS5. Okay.
Yeah. And, okay, I'm going to veer off a little bit, but for gamers out there, this is just a little bit in the case of nerdy of Rumorville, but rumor has it is that Sony is giving developers dev kits for the PS5 Pro, so there might be a Pro version of the PS5 console not too far on the horizon. So if you've been holding out this long. For a next-gen console, you might just want to kind of dig deep and kind of take it easy just a little bit longer to see if those rumors come true. And that's what I'm going to do with the PS5 as well. So, but yeah, if you do have a next, well, I guess you call it, like, is it current-gen now? I mean, the thing is, these consoles came out in 2020 during the pandemic, and so it's a lot of people who have gotten their consoles by this point still haven't gotten them yet, just because like access to them has been so limited and stuff. The Series X is becoming a little more commonplace, but even then, when you hear that it's available, you kind of have to be quick about it, unless you buy it online. Where in the case of one of the reasons why this caught my interest was just the fact that you could do co-op. If you had to play by yourself, I'd probably be like, but when Eric said that he was going to get it, I was like, oh, okay, so I can actually co-op with someone about it. So that actually piqued my interest. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Okay, We are not done yet. Now, before I get to this point, you will know, a lot of gamers will probably know that there's a lot of off-end drama pertaining to this. Don't really dive into that this much right now, because there's a lot of he said, she said stuff going on. So I just want to really focus on the game itself and not too much of all the controversy surrounding it. But between now and our next episode, Bayonetta 3 would have premiered on the Nintendo Switch. So this being the third installment, it's set 8 years after Bayonetta previously graced us with her presence. So get ready for the latest and long-awaited third installment of the nonstop climatic action experience. Bayonetta 3 is finally back on a scale that surpasses everything that the franchise has offered so far. So mysterious life forms appearing to be neither angel nor demon are ravaging our world. And Bayonetta, the omnipotent witch, is here to save our world, which is on the verge of destruction. Experience brand new gameplay elements like Demon Masquerade, where Bayonetta fuses with an eternal demon to wield even more formidable magic power, and Demon Slave, which lets Bayonetta control infernal demons at will to obliterate enemies. Bayonetta 3 offers even more dynamic and sadistic action than ever before. A little more detail about the gameplay and the story, but you can check that out in the show notes. Bayonetta 3, it's been pretty much a cult classic. It's, a lot of people like to compare it to Devil May Cry just because of the over-the-top action and stuff. Eric, did you ever play any of the Bayonetta games?
Yeah, I played 1 and 2.
Okay. Oh, you played both of them?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right. Finally, we have one more bit of nerdy news, and this is fresh off the presses, guys. Now, disclaimer, this is going to be an absolutely not for me, but Konami has kind of stirred the pot because they haven't been making video games in quite some time, but now they are back at it, apparently, and they are going back to a very, very much beloved franchise. Not for me. This is an absolute hell to the null for my taste in video games. But the Silent Hill universe is expanding. And it's expanding with not one, not two, but three very, very different games. So from J.J. Abrams to Annapurna Interactive, everyone is getting into Konami's horror series. So, Silent Hill fans, hold on to your butts, because Konami, Wednesday they announced it, dropped a ton of news about the future of this iconic horror franchise. And aside from confirming a long-rumored remake of Silent Hill 2, the studio revealed three new games in the same universe. So, there's Silent Hill Townfall, and Ascension, and F. So they all sound like incredibly different experiences, because Town Hall comes from Annapurna Interactive and No Code, a Glasgow studio known for strong narrative skills and horror world building in titles like Observation and Stories Untold. The short teaser for Town Hall features an old school pocket television clipping through tense conversations and disturbing scenes, and it looks to be the most traditional Silent Hill game of the trio. Then there's Ascension, that is the least game-like installment, but it comes with a game attached from J.J. Abrams. It's an interactive streaming series where the entire community shapes the canon of Silent Hill. And its tagline is "Face Your Trauma Together." Ascension comes from Abrams Studio Bad Robot and GenVid, a company that produces interactive live shows. It's described as a new form of entertainment that blends community, live storytelling, and interactivity. That's due next year, 2023. And then there is Silent Hill F, a game that sounds like an exciting departure for the series. It's coming from Ryokishi 07, a creative known for crafting acclaimed visual novels with psychological horror and supernatural mysteries at their core. So the teaser for F is both gorgeous and gruesome. And it's really, really sad. It was like, oh man, that's terrible. I can't play that. That's a sad story. Featuring our young roamer as Bowlers, as she is consumed from the inside out by tentacles of a flesh-eating plant. Sounds very Silent Hill to me. YouTube description for the teaser says the game is set in 1960s Japan, featuring a beautiful yet horrifying world. The video only gets bloodier as it goes on, so dip out early if it's making you squirm. I can attest to that. I don't know why I kept watching it. All the signs were telling me to stop. Stop. You still have a chance. It's getting worse. You still have a chance. Okay, well, all right. Well, deal with it. So there's no word yet on the release date or the platforms for it. But then there's the renewed interest in Silent Hills alongside Bloober's team remake of Silent Hill 2. A new movie called Return of Silent Hill is also in the works from Chris Gans, so the director of the 2006 film adaptation. So if you are fans of Silent Hill, rejoice. Are there any said fans on this panel?
Nope.
I knew I liked y'all for a reason. Of course, like I always say, if this is up your alley, by all means, I am thrilled for you. But I like to go to bed knowing that I don't have to have any nightmares on my plate. But again, stay tuned for more details on the Silent Hills expansions as they come about. Okay, but whatever the case, if you want to stay up to date with our sci-fi and fantasy book recommendations, along with updates in nerd culture, be sure to check out the storiesfornerds.com website, along with our social media outlets, that being our Twitter page, our Facebook group, and our SFN Tales Facebook page. You can also subscribe to our newsletter where you will get exclusive giveaways and extra access, like short stories and gifts from featured storytellers of the past. You can also support us financially by going to our Patreon page where you will get uncut episodes and our Story by Nerd segments in their entirety. Woo! So, now that that is all said and done, gang, we have finally arrived to the Nerdy Chat segment of this episode. So, Abby, I saw that you had quite the interesting take on the Amazon well of holy crap
Rings of Power.
I kept on wanting to say Well of Time. I was like, no, not the Well of Time. We know what you think about the Well of Time. No. We're not going back there.
Don't get me started.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Focus. Yeah. We're here. You're in the same place. But you did have some thoughts on the Lord of the Rings Rings of Power series, and generally speaking, it was meh. But you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I know that's probably going to offend people who are on either extreme, the ones who loved it and the ones who hated it. But yeah,
I neither loved nor hated it. How can you just be like, it's okay?
Yeah, meh. yeah, well, I'll tell you how. So I think it was visually stunning and beautiful. The music was great. The acting was great. So, like, artistically, it was really great. But the writing was kind of, it was great to look at. And I think as far as the story goes, I think they did the best they could considering that they are constrained by, you know, an IP where they cannot take risks with storytelling. They can't really change the characters. They can't, like, their hands are tied, I think.
That's fair. Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be too critical of the writers. I think that they did their best. I think everyone's just waiting for Hollywood to take some risks again on new IPs. That would be nice. But since this is what we have, and they're not taking risks, this is what we get. And I think we get story by committee here.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
That's totally fair. And I think that's where you get those mixed reactions from people, because a lot of people who are really, really passionate fans about the franchise, they were really hoping that this would be an expansion of sorts of the lore that they already know. But going back to what you're saying, I mean, their hands were probably like really tied and stuff, and so they had to be very cautious about it. But then because they were cautious about it, that doesn't satisfy the other people, and the other people who are completely oblivious to it, they're just like, yeah, well, I like elves. Yay! I'm sorry.
I do think some people are seeing complexities in these characters that I am not seeing.
Okay.
Yeah. And hey, if you saw complexity there, great. Good on you.
Yeah.
Somebody I know online pointed out that like the Peter Jackson trilogy of Lord of the Rings actually had kind of almost a similar runtime, I think probably 12 hours, whereas this is about 8 hours. Mm-hmm. So both of them are like, okay, maybe not quite similar, but you know, in the same general ballpark of 8 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
And yet you see so much more complexity and epic storytelling with Lord of the Rings. But hey, guys, you know, Tolkien spent 30 years working on that story, whereas we've got like a team of committee writers here who spent a couple of years maybe. So, okay. I mean, you know, I think it's comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah. Sure.
Interesting.
And
okay.
They did get greenlit for season 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'll even watch season 2. I probably will, because it's just such good eye candy. Mm. But I think it's one of these things where I'll drop it. Or I'm probably going to prioritize other shows above this one.
Right.
And I'll drop it if I
can. And if the story doesn't pick up to like where it keeps you hooked, there's other options that might suffice.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I got some comments. Should I wait for my turn or go now?
Unless you're going to comment on what Abby was saying.
Yes. It's just interesting. different sets of assumptions and same disappointment from a different angle.
Oh.
Did you read The Silmarillion?
I got about 60 pages into it and couldn't take it anymore. Sorry. I am not.
Okay. I'm just wondering where you're coming from. Yeah, no, I'm not either.
I am not a fan. To be clear, I am one of the few living, not Tolkien detractors, but I just don't find it nearly as awe-inspiring as so many people do. Possibly really because funny. Every other fantasy of my generation was a knockoff of Tolkien. Mm. So I've been steeped in so many knockoffs that going back and reading the original didn't give me anything new, that unique, or interesting.
Fair. Yeah, right? No, that's fair. Extremely fair. I feel like I kind of agree with that to some degree. I had a good time reading Lord of the Rings, but I read it with that academic mindset, you know, like the same mindset as I would read H.G. Wells or, you know, like Jules Verne or something, where it's like, okay, well, this is written in this period. You know, the same mindset I had when I read Foundation. It's like, you know, this is very much firmly steeped in this time period. Anyway, like it, reading it from that angle, I can see why it was groundbreaking. And I admire
it. Well, it was. It. Yeah. Once upon a time, it did. It established the groundwork for pretty much all of modern fantasy mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, epic, heroic, mythic, all of that.
Because like when you said that, the one book that made it came to mind for me, which would be equivalent, is Dune. Like a lot of people have read up on Dune.
Also.
It's like, well, I don't see what the whole big deal is. It seems like just about like any other sci-fi story. It's like, well, that's because this is the sci-fi story that kind of
Valerian, you know, which established a lot of the tropes that they use in sci-fi now that Like, you know, when the movie came out, Valerian, people were like, oh, these are all overused cliches. It's like, well, because it was the first to use those cliches.
Well, I did that once upon a time, right? I went back and read Hugo Gernsback's Ralph 1-2-3-4-1, which is one of the original, you know, coil winder science fiction novels published, I think, in 1911, 14, something like that. And it's an absolute slog and a horror show, except that it was the foundation from which every other pulp writer emerged. Yeah. And you can see it. You can see the core ideas. Everyone who ever has an antenna on the top of their head, thank Hugo Gernsback for that. Not kidding. Not kidding. Trouble. The Jetsons are Hugo Gernsback with modern technology. It's really entertaining. And worth reading, but not, right, having grown up in the aftermath of the innovation that he did, I'm kind of the same way with Tolkien. Same thing, speaking of Asimov, right? Mm-hmm. I enjoy his short fiction, but I have found his novels to be variably meh.
Well, I think they're hard for anybody who's, like, used to modern fiction. Like, they're just not written the same with Dune. Like, these novels are not written the way modern novels are. So, yeah.
They really aren't.
They're not. You know, and it's interesting when you can go back, because I still adore, for example, Dracula. Mm. Published in 1896. I read it and love it. I've read it probably 6 or 7 times. Frankenstein, not so much. partly because I so radically disagree with its fundamental thematic points, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Do remember... Frankenstein really was a social piece of its time, like when you really think about it and stuff. So, and Dracula, it's interesting that you can actually go back to. I've never read the book. I mean, of course,
I actually never have either. Isn't that weird?
I would highly recommend it. I think it's infinitely readable, and there are actually some layers and points in the novel that simply don't exist in very many of the spinoff properties. So
okay.
That I think adds some actually relevant depth, but just my opinion.
Okay. Duly noted. Okay. Well, I know that we got to keep the ball rolling because we definitely spent a good deal of time in the nerdy news and stuff.
What did you think of Rings of Power, Scott?
You know, I had similar overall response to you in that I thought it started well. I thought it suggested a lot more thematic complexity than it ended up delivering. And whether that's, you know, writing by committee, whether that was the limitations of operating within the Lord of the Rings universe and the fact that all of these characters have to end up in a very well-defined place.
Right.
Therefore, we can't get too far off the beaten path now. I was leery of focusing it on Galadriel and thought that ultimately it worked out, even though I thought the character diminished in interestingness episode by episode, which is kind of where I ended up at, is I ended up finishing with not quite as much meh as I think Abby did, but with a fair quantity of it. I will watch the sequel. I'll even, you know, I'll do like I did with this one. I'll wait until all the episodes are out and then binge it. You know, the mysteries weren't mysterious. I picked out both of the main characters there, both of the secret characters.
I keep seeing people online going, I couldn't have guessed who Sauron was. Oh, I didn't guess who the Strand. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, wasn't it obvious? Yeah.
Well, even the false ending there on episode 6 or whatever it was, where they tried to snooker us, it was just like, yeah, no, I don't believe you.
Right.
Too well placed, too clever, you're lying to me. Okay.
How many episodes was this season? Was it 8?
8.
It was 8, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting enough. It does have the disease of taking 5.5 good hours of content and stretching it out to just short of 9.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that are repeated, a lot of filler, a lot of, and at some point there were too many notes. There were too many characters with too many subplots that were too similar.
There were too many things going on, right?
I think you can have a lot of characters in subplots, like with Game of Thrones, had a ton of complexity, and that was great. But I mean, these people were having, like, everything was so predictable, and the, their characters were so simplistic.
And whether it was because of the writing by committee or you know, the straitjacket of the trilogy or whatever it was, or just, you know, weak imaginations, I don't know. I thought they filled in some detail, but was the detail you got worth the vehicle? That's a value judgment. It was beautifully filmed. Yeah. Some of the CGI was pretty early on, but it got better, strangely. I'm not sure how that works. Why does CGI improve as the episodes go?
I don't know about that, but I think they probably blew a lot of the budget on that episode 5 or 6, whatever that big battle scene was.
Yeah.
I think they blew a lot of the CGI budget on that.
Well, and to be clear, right? I mean, the creation of, I don't think I'm giving anything away, Mordor exists, right? Mm-hmm. The creation of Mordor in Middle Earth as a creation story, I thought it was really interesting and well delivered, and again, the sleight of hand there was predictable and obvious and blah blah blah, but it was still kind of cool, up to a point.
Yeah, the part where I don't want to give it away, but the stranger says, "I'm good." Yes. You know, that was cute. I mean, I think it was extremely predictable, but it was still kind of fun to watch because you're like, "Aw."
Yeah, it was. And what's funny is from almost exactly that moment through the end of the series, the character got less interesting. Yeah. Which was how I felt about a lot of it, is they did an interesting job of setting up the characters and did not deliver on the fulfillment of those characters, in my opinion. Beautifully filmed, worth watching. If you're a fan of the trilogy, you're going to love the additional detail. If you're not, elves and Harfoots and whatever gets a little redundant after a couple episodes. So,
all right. Well, that was,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. That was very, very in-depth. I never watched the series, but I think I got a really well drawn out, like, analysis of it. So
I'm waiting for my turn to talk about it when it comes to facts. Oh. I have a different opinion.
Okay. Well,
holding his peace.
Well, we will get to that point eventually, so we are going to go ahead and move up to you, Scott. What other stuff were you up to besides Lord of the Rings?
So in a radical change of pace, I ended up doing a Keanu Reeves film festival for reasons that I cannot begin to explain. What happened is I just really wanted to watch John Wick again, so I did, and then I realized, you know, he really does play the same character in every single movie he does. He plays it really, really well. And the distinctions are really minimal. So I want to see if I can find something else he did that was interesting. And I found a flick called Replicas. Cloning and mind transfer from a dead human to a either clone or machine. So kind of a classic mad scientist story. Except that it's Keanu Reeves, right? So he's a deeply caring, kind of likable buffoon mad scientist who falls into all of the simplistic traps. But because his heart is pure, you root for him anyway. Anyway, for what it's worth, Replicas, 2010, it's on Netflix, and I thought it was entertaining. Watched an animated flick called series called started watching an animated series called Super Crooks. Got about 5 episodes into it and just lost the impetus. Not because it was bad, just because it wasn't great. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a premise that set itself up and didn't develop quickly enough to hold my interest through to the end of the limited series. And I've just started watching one called Glitch.
That sounds familiar.
Which is a Korean, aliens are real, but only some people can see them, and reality glitches as a result.
Oh, okay, no, I haven't heard of that.
So it's new. It's on Netflix. So yeah, for those of you who just canceled Netflix, oh well. I'm enjoying it so far, but I'm only an episode and a half into it. So
okay,
for whatever that's worth. And that was my media consumption this time.
Okay, that's what's up. Very good. And what about you, Mr. E?
So I will start off with saying, for Rings of Power, I've only watched about 4 episodes because I'm watching with my brother. So I'm more enjoying it just because he and I are just bonding over talking about, like, it's more than nostalgia. We're talking about Tolkien, talking about the characters, and, you know, like, you know, like we like predicting, like, going, oh, I bet that's where they're building Mordor. Oh, that's really kind of cool to see where that's going to be, you know, what that's going to turn into. So we have more fun debating the show and talking about things that are going to be coming. So that's one thing we're more enjoying, is the nostalgia that the show brings back from it.
I'll be really curious to see how you feel at the end of it, because the first 5 episodes I thought were stellar.
Yeah.
And it was after that it became kind of redundant.
Yeah. So like I said, I'm more just enjoying, because my brother and I, like I said, we're bonding over it. We're having a lot of just fun talks, just talking about, you know, because we both read the books. We both, you know, we both enjoyed the books. So we're enjoying talking about, oh, this is where, you know, this is where the wall is going to be that Aragorn, you know, shows up at. This is going to be, you know, that. So we're having a lot of fun, just more nostalgia and talking and debating, you know, about Tolkien and all that. So that's what we're enjoying. That's more what I'm enjoying from the show. Probably I enjoy the show itself, but I'm more enjoying the conversations I get to have with my brother about it. So that's nice. More. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So that's more one of the reasons why I'm really enjoying it. And I'm looking forward to
it. And I think if you're a deep fan of the trilogy, you'll enjoy it more than I did. Because I found it interesting, but because I am not an absolute Tolkien fan, I do not hang off of every word ever written. Eventually, it just kind of got been there, done that, seen it before. For me.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm looking forward to watching it more, just like I said, I like having those talks with my brother as we compare, like going, oh, I'm looking forward to see what's going to be. Oh, didn't that happen? You know, so it's more I'm enjoying the show, but like I said, I enjoy the experience the show is bringing with my brother to bond over it. So
I had a similar experience when I watched Babylon 5 for the 5th time with my oldest son.
Yeah, so like I said, I like the show, but it's more for a different reason. Because like I said, I like the experience it's bringing, So
Very watchable, right?
Oh yeah, no, it is very watchable. Like I said, it's very watchable, but it's one of those. It's hard, you know. My brother and I like to watch a bunch of shows, but we don't have a lot where we can actually get to in-depth debates about a show. So It's very nice to have that show to be able to talk each other with and talk fantasy together. So it's a lot of fun doing that. Then I've also been watching She-Hulk, which is, I'm only about halfway through that season as well. I'm behind on it, but that show is fun. I will say it is a lot of fun.
I'm considering trying it. Yeah.
It's in my queue, and there is so much opposing viewpoint on that one.
Yes.
It's all love, hate.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no in between.
I guess I can understand. I know some people who are like She-Hulk purists are a little upset about it. It's a very mixed bag. Honestly, I'm just enjoying it. I think it's a really fun story. I think they do a really good job of bringing this character in and changing it up. Instead of having a drama like that, it's just a very fun action comedy show, which it's, you know, because what's her name? Raph, who's the main girl who plays She-Hulk? I'm blanking on her
name.
Tatiana Matsuri. I apologize for butchering her name, but she does such. She has such great timing in that show, especially with Titania. Those two, just I love them playing off each other. They do such a good job with each other. Like I said, I think it's a fun show. Other than that, I've been reading manga. You know, still reading manga. The same mangas from last time, because it's still ongoing. I've been playing Less 14 and actually getting more back into Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Just been having a lot of fun replaying that game. Don't know why, I just got the itch to play something in ancient Greece, and just it's a very fun game.
It's like that sometimes.
Yeah, And the nice thing is, my wife has decided, like, you know, she's gotten in, because watching me play it, she got into Assassin's Creed as well.
Yeah, I was so, that was the funniest thing when she was, well, she has to go into work and everything, not to tell her business or anything. But then I was so, I was so, like, dumbfounded when she was like, well, are you gonna play Assassin's Creed? And Eric's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, because, well, I want to see what happens to the wolf. I was like,
So she's getting hooked on the story and wants to watch me play it. So, funny side story is, we also through Gamefly got Elden Ring. I played about, you know, 5 soul crushing minutes of it and just said, okay, I have my soul crushed enough. I'm good. And then my wife goes, if you've never seen my wife play, she's still at that point where she has to stare at the controller to figure out what the buttons are. You know, cause she asked me, goes, how do you do it? I go, a lifetime of playing video games, you just get muscle memory of where the buttons are. So she starts to look down. She goes, and Raph and I, one of our buddies is getting married. So we went to his bachelor party this past weekend. She goes, I'm going to have Elden Ring beat by the time you get back. I was like, good luck with that. She didn't touch it. She got into Assassin's Creed.
No, she did not beat Elden Ring.
Yes. She did not. She, as Raph put it, she died, I think, 5 times in the tutorial stage where there's no enemies. as she likes to joke, she is notorious for killing her characters by walking off cliffs because she does not understand. Because she just is like, oh, that's pretty. Oh, I didn't realize that was a cliff.
That was a struggle my kids had with Bloodborne, was that it was really interesting and visually spectacular, but the twitchiness of the UI was so precise that they just never found the handle on it.
And you have to, and with those type of, with those like Souls games, you have to embrace the fact that you will die.
You will die.
A lot.
Yeah. So
it's part of the experience.
I played it. It's like, it's very pretty. It's a Souls game. And, you know, I was like, okay, I already know how I'm going to feel about this game. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have that anger in my life. So I'm going to send it back.
Fair enough.
Yeah. We sent them back. I'm hoping, like I said, to get one of the games I want to know. She's looking for some games coming. So it's been the other thing I'm doing is watching her play games, which is interesting to see, you know, someone new coming into the gaming world and, you know, and her asked me, like, I've never played Assassin's Creed Origins, the one in Egypt. I never actually played that one. And she goes, Eric, what am I supposed to do here? It's like, I haven't played this game. I don't know the controls. It's the same as Odyssey, I'm assuming. So hit A. And she's like, it did. I was like, great.
Go play.
Yeah, go play. Have fun. Yeah. So yeah, so that's part of the fun now is seeing my wife experience some of these, you know, seeing her experience some of these games the first time. And you know, so that's also been enjoyable is it's like, you know, it's fun. She's falling in love with some of the games that I like. And having discussions with her about those. So like I said, she's been loving me watch. She's been liking watching me play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I'm not allowed to play main story until she's there, so she can actually see what's going on. Mm-hmm. So that's been mine. Like I said, it's more just been, it's been nostalgia and fun is what I've been having. It's more nostalgia and conversations with loved ones.
There you go.
Through nerdy chat.
Good deal. Okay. In my
nerdy chat for the win.
Nerdy chat for the
title
win.
Title drop.
Hey. In my case, I actually took a note from Scott, and because of you, Mr. Parkins, Netflix has you to thank for me re-subscribing because you were talking about Cyberpunk Edge Runners, and you spoke up about it so much. I was like, okay, fine. You and everyone else has piqued my interest so much to the point. It's like, all right, Netflix, here you go. You can have my money back for the time being. You aren't lying, dude. It is graphic. I've only watched one episode so far. Man, holy crap. I mean, it's this all there.
It never lets up. It's like that throughout.
And that's what I figured. It's like, you know what? I think they're just kind of like setting the pace for what you can expect the rest of the series to be like. And Sarah, Eric's wife, asked me, was like, so is it like the video game? And I was like, well, I never played the game, but from what I've gathered just by watching those initial gameplay and initial trailers, I was like, well, it seems about as morbid as the universe is, because it's just such a, it's like you're living in a cesspool of humans. In that world, it's just like human beings are—they're just like they're cannon fodder. You don't really matter anymore in this dystopian future and stuff. And they make that very clear in the opening episode. This what the value of life is, or the lack thereof is. It's well, you value if you can pay for the value. Otherwise, I mean, we're just like, oh yeah, well, you know, here's another one. So, visually, it is very, very stunning. It is wow. I'm not too sure if I would say it's like Arcane level of wow, but that's a completely different art style and stuff. But still, man, is it nice to look at. It has a
very well put
together. It has a very funkadelic vibe about it. It just fits very, very well. I'm really, really loving the style that they have with it. The premise just seems very, very interesting. So it kind of, and the first episode leaves on a cliffhanger. I'm not too sure if this is what the premise of the story is going to be around, but it's definitely enough for me to be like, oh, okay. Episode 2, please. I've enjoyed what I've seen so far, and I'm looking forward to diving into it more. No pun intended. Other thing that I dabbled into. Oh man, I got back into. That was like the latest thing of anime that I got into. But I also subscribe to Crunchyroll. I've been off the train of anime for a good minute, but I was like, man, I really need to get back into this. And the ironic part is, the one thing that got me into it was not all the must-watch animes that everyone keeps raving about, but it's my guilty pleasure, that being Phantasy Star Online. Because there was a period where the game was, although there's like animes based on the game, and there's a period where they were actually broadcasting the animes, the series, like in the game itself. And so I would actually stop every once in a while to see like what's going on, and I was like, oh wow, that looks actually pretty interesting. And eventually on one weekend, I was just like, I think I'm gonna check this out. And I saw that it was on YouTube. Turns out that there are two Phantasy Star Online 2 animes, and I watched the wrong one. And by the time I realized it was the wrong one, I was almost done with it, which wasn't the worst thing. I mean, it was only 10 episodes, and each episode was like just 24 minutes. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm at episode 7, so I might as well just keep chucking along. Very, very... It kind of has like that similar tone that you would expect from Phantasy Star, just because of the game. It's very slice of life, very kind of. I mean, there's some somewhat serious tones to it, but I mean, it's just a fun anime. So then, when I went to watch the actual anime that it was based off of, man, was I in for a huge surprise. I went and told Eric, I was like, yo, E, this is not like the video game. If I watched the anime and went and played the video game, I was like, man, y'all really, really like Barneyed the dinosaur out of this video game, because holy crap, the anime was heavy. It was very, very dark, very, very gritty, very violent. It's very, very good, but just the tone of it is completely different from the tone that's in the game, because the game, it's very teen rated, and you're fighting monsters, and when you fight them, they blow up, and you hear stories about like the deaths and stuff that these monsters are doing, but you don't hear about it in the anime. You actually see it, and when they show it, they don't just filter it. It's very, very graphic. But That being said, it's really, really, it's, I'm surprised by how good of a story it is. So I ended up getting 10 episodes into that. I think that one's a 24-episode series. But yeah, I'm definitely going to keep on chucking along with that.
Important safety tip for all of those out there thinking about watching this. It's fantasy with a PH, not an F.
Ah, yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
As I just discovered the hard way.
All right. I was like, he keeps talking about this game. I'm not even finding the game. I'm not finding the anime. Is he losing it over there? Sorry about that. Yes. PH. They were colorful with the way that is spelled out. What else has there been?
Andor.
Oh, right. The thing that I keep saying I really want to talk about, but I kept saying I'm going to wait until we have another chat episode. Yeah. This is, by the time you guys get this episode, it's episode 7 of Andor, well, premiered. I just can't believe how good this show is. this show makes me so undeniably happy to be a Star Wars fan. It is absolutely breathtaking. It is just, it's brilliant. It is just so good. I told myself that I was like, okay, well, I hate having to get fed one episode a week and everything, so I'm just gonna watch each episode to avoid spoilers. But each episode is so fulfilling and just so well written and thought out that I'm like, I want to watch that episode again. Even the ones where there's no action or anything like that, they're just so well done. That I told someone, I was like, you know what, when this season is done, I'm actually going to go back and binge. Oh yeah, it was E. Thanks. I'm gonna go back and just rewatch the whole thing because it's by far like some of the best Star Wars storytelling out there. It's so good.
Well, and as you and I talked about, as we said, you know, there's a show out there currently called, that I believe it's completed, called Washington Spies, which is about, you know, the Revolutionary War and the spies in the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. I said, if they made something called, like, you know, like Spies of the Republic or something like that, Spies of the Rebellion, I would love to watch it based on this. Cause
yeah,
like this, like just seeing the politics of the, like of everyone trying to do the double speak in the count, like, you know, why am I having such brain farts tonight? As the where Moth works, the Palpatine Senate. Thank you. Seeing the double talk of the senators and them trying to make their plans and trying to, you know, like as this empire is slowly closing its grip, you know, on rights and on people, them trying to do their plans of saving people and trying to do things that are going against what the Empire is doing, and the rebellion slowly starting to come into shape and having these spies, you know, kind of compete against the Empire spies. So, you know, it's one of those you don't hear a lot about it, but this show is doing such a good job of being almost like, hey, we need a spy network and the Empire's already got spies. We need to figure out a way to get up to that level and compete against them. And I would love to see that expanded more. So if they did a show that didn't have to focus on Andor, it was just about more about that, I would love to see it.
And I think the interesting thing is when you look at what the show is about and the basis of the show and the pacing of the show, and when you think of Star Wars, you would think that this should not work. Because when you look at any previous television show, cartoon, or Star Wars movie, like there are certain aspects that you expect to kind of keep people engaged and going for you, which is like, there's action. There's enough action to keep you going. There are some there's probably two episodes where you could say there has been action. Otherwise, it's just, It's a thriller. That's what this is. It's like it's Star Wars set in a thriller, like a spy thriller. And I'm me and Eric's wife, like, once we're done watching it, we're kind of like, I'm exhausted. I'm so emotionally exhausted just because you feel it's so much tension and you're just waiting for something to go wrong because everything right now is kind of very, very hush hush, very, very underhanded and everything. And so there's this really huge sense of dread of like, oh, wait a minute, are they going to figure it out here? Is this plan going to work out the way that they thought it was? And the thing is, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the Republic wins and stuff. But seeing how it's developing at this point, you're not too sure if these people who are orchestrating it are going to actually achieve that goal or make it out in general, because, hey, there are some faces that we haven't even seen before. So there is a good sense of uncertainty, and it's just the way that they carry that tension and that unbeknownst, you feel like you're walking on needles like the whole time. And I'm just like, this show, every episode is like, man, this was a lot. This show was so much. So I actually posted an article on the Facebook group about how this show is underperforming with viewers, even though it's getting rave reviews, hands down, by everyone. Everyone is arguing. Everyone who's seen it has said it's by far like the best Star Wars show out there. But the thing is, it doesn't have the name Obi-Wan Kenobi or the name Boba Fett to kind of get things wrong for anything. Everyone's like, Andor, wasn't that the guy from Rogue One? I mean, yeah, Rogue One was good, but I mean, who cares about that guy? It's almost like suffering from the Han Solo effect. Like when that movie came out, I was like, okay, well, it was a bad movie, but like, who asked for this? Well, no one may have asked for like the backstory to this character in Star Wars, but there's so much more to it than just his backstory. It's pretty much the backstory of the rebellion as a whole and stuff. So
do you have to have watched anything else to appreciate this?
Rogue One.
No, well, so I would. So one thing to add here is if you watch Star Wars Rebels, which Hera's storyline deals with kind of if you've watched Rebels, if you haven't, spoilers, I guess, by this point, she was very much pushing to get this rebellion started. And she was mentioning their group was a cell in this. And it lightly touches on the rebellion building. You don't have to, I wouldn't say you have to watch it to understand this.
You would
appreciate more of the backstory of what's going on. Cause Rebels they lightly touch on some of the issues going on in the galaxy from this one cell's perspective. And Andor is kind of touching a little more about the main issues going on and how the rebellion is kind of slowly gaining traction and how it's slowly getting up there. If you watch Rogue One, you get more appreciation of where Andor ends up.
Yeah.
But you don't, but I don't think you have to watch it.
I agree. And when you said that, I was about to say, I take that back. I take back what I said. You would appreciate it more if you saw Rogue One, but no, you do not have to watch it.
Honestly, would say,
you could watch Rogue One afterwards.
Yes. I would say at this point, watch Andor first, like wait for the entire season to come out, watch Andor. Then you could watch Rogue One to see where he ends up. Cause I've heard rumors they want to do two seasons of Andor. I've heard rumors they want to do this first season is, I think, supposed to be the kind of a stretch of about like them getting started. The second season is supposed to have a time jump where it jumps just before Rogue One in essence. That's the rumor I've heard. I don't know how true that is. Yeah. Like I've heard a rumor because like, I think this first season is supposed to be 12 episodes. It's 24 or something. So it's supposed to be a long season. And I've heard, like, I can't remember if they said the first season was supposed to expand between like years. Like it's supposed to be covering multiple years. In the first season, the second season, they wanted to only cover 1 year. And so, like I said, I know they have plans for two seasons. I don't know how well it's going to do.
Yeah. So, long answer short, Scott, sorry for what I said initially. No, you don't have to watch anything. You can start with Andor.
Well, that's the thing, because I have not watched any of the series, with the exception of a little bit of Clone Wars.
No, yeah. So you'll be totally fine. You'll be totally fine.
No, you'll be fine. Like I said, it's more just like, if you watched Rebels, you get a little more appreciation and more like, oh, when are they going to mention
There's a lot of Easter eggs and stuff like that that you'll probably pick up on and stuff. But otherwise, no, not really. I would love to delve into this a lot more, but we are pressing up on time. So we are going to go ahead and wrap it up for this Nerdy Chat. But hey, don't worry. Follow up with us 2 weeks from now where we will be continuing our next segment of our latest Story by Nerds story. But whatever the case, if you want to hold off on that and follow up with us a month from now, we'll have our... That'll be our final Nerdy Chat episode of the year. But don't worry about that. You got time between now and then. So if you like this podcast, whether that is on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, be sure to give us a like, hearts, thumbs up, stars, whatever positive outlet to this source of the podcast. But whatever the case, that is going to do it for this episode of the Stories for Nerds podcast. Hey, I'm Raphael and Jordan. Y'all keep thinking big on collective level. And this is Scott, Abby, and Eric signing off. Scott, what is the final send-off to our listeners?
I am absolutely positive that testing negative can be a good thing. Deep.
Hey, and safe negative, watches and is a negative equals a positive, too.
Always put the emphasis on the right spot.